right, everybody. Welcome back to the Mid-American Bandwagon Podcast, episode 42, coming to you live here tonight. As always, I am Zach Folador, steering this ship along with my partner in crime, Sam Thillman. Sam, we had snow on the ground here in Pennsylvania today. How's it been in Indiana?
Yeah, I can't lie. It's been like that for the past couple of days. For some reason, it decided to snow really heavily for 10 minutes, and now it's clear skies. So I don't know what's going on with the weather. It's freaking April 21st. I actually went to Top Golf and played in the snow there, so that was pretty fun.
Nice, nice. Yeah, I was like blown. It was like, I mean, last week it was like 80 degrees here. Now it's snowing again. I'll never understand this part of the country this time of year. But hey, whatever. That's never here nor there. We got a lot to get to here tonight. Let's jump right into the news here. First things first, Sam. And I thought this was pretty funny because last week you and I talked about this. We talked about the MAC lifting this intra-conference transfer rule and allowing student athletes to transfer between MAC schools without sitting out a year. Both of you and I, we both commented on the fact that we couldn't remember a case or a time when a student transferred from one MAC school to another for athletic purposes. And here we are 1 week later, and we've got two pretty prominent cases to talk about.
Yeah, we'll start. Actually, they both revolve around Ball State. I'll start with KJ Walton, the sixth year heading to his seventh year coming out of the Ball State program. He decided to take his talents to Akron, while NIU's leading scorer from previous season, Tyler Cochran, decided to transfer from Northern Illinois to Ball State. So two big moves, both involving Ball State, happened basically on the same day or maybe one day later than each other.
Yeah, it is pretty interesting. Man, KJ Walton, it's like he's never going to graduate from college. As anyone that has followed him knows, this is a guy that, you know, started his college career at Missouri, played his first 2 years at Missouri, transferred to Ball State. In the 1920 season, got hurt, only played 10 games, but, you know, came back this year, had a really good year, 16.5 points, 54% from the field. I mean, this is a guy that he can score. He's a bucket getter for sure. And, he just seems like he's ready to keep playing in college. Good for him. And then, you know, Tyler Cochran, Sam, this is a guy that we didn't talk about a ton on the show this year, only because obviously Northern Illinois had a bit of a tough season. Mark Montgomery was let go halfway through. But, I mean, this is a guy who was their leading scorer this year, 15.5 points a game. And something that you pointed out beforehand, Sam, this is a guy that, you know, he's only listed at 6'2", and he averaged 7 rebounds a game for the Huskies this year. So this is a guy who is a guard that is not afraid to go underneath and you know, among the trees and fight for some boards and get some putbacks and stuff like that. Obviously, Ball State, it's been a rough offseason for him to this point. KJ Walton's leaving now, obviously. Jerron Coleman and Ish El-Amin transferred out previously. So this seems like a pretty good pickup for the Cardinals.
Yeah, and you mentioned 6'2 and 8 rebounds. That's one key area Ball State struggled on. Not only that, I think it has to do a lot with the coaching change that happened in DeKalb, essentially. Yeah. You go from a situation where you're basically the guy to where you're basically the guy. You get the minutes, but with an established head coach, and no offense to the Northern Illinois program, he has basically a better system or a better surrounding cast around him as of this year, even with all the departures, Brocken Hazen, KJ Walton, Jerron Coleman. I would still take Myron Thomas and Luke Bumbleow, no offense, Northern Illinois, over what they had last year. We saw the product that they put out of the field. That's why they fired their head coach last year. I think he put his name into the transfer portal, didn't get a lot of interest, saw a slightly better program. Ball State's probably going to have to rebuild a little bit after losing so many guys. But at the same time, they can still be a little bit competitive. I'm not going to say top 4 seed, but like last season, maybe you can make a push for that 8 seed.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I think what you just mentioned is a good point there, Sam, in terms of like his game and the way that he fits into this team and how this team is going to look next year. And when you think about what it is that, you know, a lot of the guys returning for Ball State, like you mentioned, Bumbleo and Maron Thomas and Brock and Hazen and some of these other guys, these are guys that can stretch the floor and can shoot from the outside. If you look at Tyler Cochran, you know, he shot 45% from the field last year, but only 22% from three. So it seems to me he's more of a slasher, get to the bucket type of guy that can help stretch the floor and you know, kind of drive and kick out to Bumbleo and some of those other guys are going to be able to knock down open threes. So potentially a good fit here for Tyler Cochran. And like you mentioned, I think what you said is pretty accurate. You know, he sees an opportunity to get good minutes at a program that is, you know, as you said, nothing against Northern Illinois, but the Ball State program here over the last couple of years has been in a little bit better shape than the Huskies have been. And obviously the coaching change definitely plays into that as well. So a lot of movement here in the MAC, a lot of movement across college basketball in general this offseason. And a lot of rosters at a lot of schools are going to look very different next year. And, you know, Ball State's just one of those teams.
Yeah, and real quick before we move on, Rashawn Bruno was announced as the head coach last in March, so he's going to have one heck of a job, not only replacing his leading scorer, but kind of turning that program around from that just terrible year they had a season ago. But yeah, Zach, kind of interesting. If you haven't followed KJ Walton's career, he's an interesting case where he's a 6'2 guard who doesn't shoot the three ball. He's maybe hit like one or two in his career. Yeah. He only shoots in the paint. It's an interesting study if you don't know how he got the 7-year, a redshirt year, a medical redshirt year, and now with the free guarantee year, this is how he's playing in Akron for, I would assume, is his last season. But who knows, at this point, they may give him like 3 more years of eligibility just because.
Yeah, he might be going for a master's, a PhD, a doctor. I mean, he can check all those boxes off the list, keep hooping that whole time. I think he would take that option if it was given it to him. Anyway, though, Sam, on the women's side, some unfortunate news, although probably not all that surprising to Ball State fans. Oshlyn Brown has decided she's going to go elsewhere for her final year of college basketball.
Yeah, if you didn't follow her on Twitter or Instagram, you may have missed this. Oshlyn Brown decided to, after putting her name in the transfer portal, decided to take her talents to New Jersey and play for the Rutgers Scarlet Knights, which, considering she put in 4 years, she did 1,000 rebounds, 1,000 points. You can't fault her. She's had one heck of a program, one of the best kind of women's basketball players Ball State's ever had. She was a beast on and off the court. Really, there's nothing more to say. I'm happy for her. She got a Power 5 offer. She can do her talents. She can showcase potentially in the NCAA tournament, more likely so with Rutgers than Ball State. So, it's sad to see her go, but at the same time, you can't be nothing but happy for her.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, like you said, Sam, she's done so much for this women's basketball program at Ball State over the last 4 years. As you mentioned, you know, just one of two players in program history with 1,000 points and 1,000 rebounds, two-time first team All-MAC, led the Cardinals in points and rebounds last year, 19 points and 13 rebounds a game, 53% from the field. I mean, this is a solid, solid player that Rutgers is picking up. And I think this is a great opportunity for Austin because a lot of people, you know, I feel like in the college sports media landscape, Rutgers tends to catch a lot of flack for not being competitive. Their basketball team's gotten a little bit better the last couple of years, but for the most part, their football team, their basketball team haven't been very good. Their women's basketball program is a really, really strong program, though. I mean, this is a team that was in the Final Four back in 2007. They made the Elite Eight 3 times in 4 years from 2005, 2007, and 2008. I mean, this is a team who has been to the NCAA tournament 15 times since the year 2000. I mean, this is a really, really good women's basketball program for Rutgers. And Oshlyn Brown has the opportunity to go right in there and be a player and get some publicity on a little bit more of a national stage, on a prominent stage in a nationally recognized program. So while you hate to see her leave the conference, this is certainly a good landing spot for her if she's looking for a little bit more exposure and maybe, you know, boosting her WNBA draft stock next season.
Yeah, no doubt. It's all about boosting her draft stock. And like I said, no hate on her. She did her thing for Ball State. She put in her time. She willed this team to the MAC tournament more often than not. It is what it is. It's sad to see her go, but hopefully New Jersey. Is it East Brunswick or where's
it's in? Yeah, it's Piscataway.
Piscataway, New Jersey, which is wild. But yeah. But yeah, just shout out to her. She did what she needed to. She came in and hope for the best for in New Jersey.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we got talking. We mentioned the WNBA draft there real quick. And something else I wanted to mention here, Sam, that we didn't have on our rundown, but just wanted to give a shout out real quick. Michaela Kelly from Central Michigan. The WNBA draft was last week on last Thursday night. And Michaela Kelly from Central Michigan was picked number 21 overall in the second round to the Connecticut Sun. So best of luck to Michaela. You know, I know they're going to be going into training camp and starting their season here over the summer. So best of luck to her, second round pick, an opportunity to go make the team up there in Connecticut. Obviously, such a storied career for the Chippewas there in Mount Pleasant. I know everyone that's a fan of the MAC is rooting for her to get her her, you know, professional career started on the right foot.
Yeah, and what's interesting about the WNBA draft, I found out, is that they do three rounds instead of the NBA's NBA two rounds.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you said, it totally slipped my mind doing the rundown for this. But yeah, shout out to Michaela Kelly. She did her thing similar to Ashlyn Brown. She got rewarded by being drafted. It's hard enough being a being drafted, let alone being drafted from a MAC school. So shout out to her. She did what she needed to. She is going to the the Connecticut Sun. So hopefully she can hoop there. We can watch her play and she can dominate in the WNBA.
Absolutely. So best of luck to Michaela Kelly, only the second woman to get drafted from Central Michigan in the WNBA draft, the first one being Crystal Bradford back in 2015. So best of luck to Michaela as she begins her professional career here over the next couple of months with the Connecticut Sun there in the WNBA. So with all that, let's go ahead and move into our weekly spring sports update here. Sam, let's start with the on the baseball side of things, taking a look at the standings and some of the results from this past weekend. You know, Toledo got the sweep over Akron. Ohio and Northern Illinois split four games. Ball State and Eastern Michigan split four. Central Michigan took 3 of 4 from Kent. You look at the standings right now, Sam. I see Ball State and Central Michigan tied at the top. What's kind of standing out for you right now on the baseball diamond?
Yeah, just the amount of how tight the top, what is that, 6 from Ball State, 12-4. I'll just give the rundown. Central Michigan, 12-4. Miami, 11-5. Western Michigan, 10-6. Ohio, who we talk each week, just how impressive they're doing with the new head coach, 11-9. And then Toledo, 11-9. Just a lot of people gunning for that top, gunning for the top spot. And it's anybody's game at this point. I'm not sure how many games left. They probably only have a few games left considering they're roughly 16 games in. But at this point, Central Michigan still is in play. Miami, Western Michigan, and then even these Ohio Toledo teams may have a outside shot at it as well.
Yeah, you're right. And as you said, we are coming down kind of towards the end of the season with each team. Looks like there's about three weekends left, three series left for each. Or I'm sorry, no, four. Hold on, let me scroll up. Like five series left for each team. So we're coming down to down the home stretch, and then we have the NCAA regional starting at the beginning of June. So there's as you said, Sam, it reminds me of the women's basketball season where you have very, very little separation. I mean, I continue to be impressed by Ohio continuing to battle. They're, you know, sitting at 11-9 now, 17-13 overall. But I think, you know, it's at the beginning of the season, it seemed like Central Michigan and Ball State were going to be the top two teams here. Central Michigan was a little bit slow getting out of the gate. You know, they lost their first four games of the year, and you know, they struggled a little bit in the non-conference, but they really seem to have found their footing here over the last couple of weeks. I mean, they took three out of four from Kent State this weekend. They took three out of four from Bowling Green last weekend. They swept Northern Illinois the weekend before that. You throw in there, you know, one loss on the road to Notre Dame, which, you know, that's you're going up against an ACC team. That's not easily, you know, that's not an easy assignment. But, you know, the Central Michigan, the Chippewas here, they really seem to be, you know, kind of rounding into form here as the season comes to a close. And, you know, Ball State's obviously still right there. I think those are going to be the two teams right there at the end, though.
Yeah, I agree. It's a little bit surprising. We talked for many weeks about just the race between Miami, Ohio, and Ball State. But like you said, Central Michigan's rounding in form. They're getting hot at the right time. Their record speaks for itself, 14-9, away 6-2 at home. They're done when they needed to. Ball State keeps it done. Unfortunately, you don't want to split four games to Eastern Michigan considering where they're at in the stadiums.
Yeah.
But you still got that first spot left. You still have three left to get the job done. So if I'm a betting person, I don't know what team I would necessarily pick between Ball State, Central Michigan, or even Miami. Miami has slipped up kind of late, yeah. But they're still in the thick of things. They could still get back to where they were. So it's anybody's race at this point.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I also agree with your assessment of, you know, I just mentioned what, you know, what Central Michigan has done over the last couple of weeks, really rounding into form. And, you know, Ball State, they haven't played poorly at all, but you know, that, you know, you split four games with Eastern Michigan. That's not ideal. Last weekend, you got the sweep over Akron, which, you know, they're having a tough year. So they just, if I'm Ball State, I'm focused on, you know, you got this season, this weekend series coming up with Northern Illinois this weekend, of really trying to put that Eastern Michigan series behind you and not think about it and really go take care of business against Northern Illinois this weekend. I mean, Northern Illinois right down there, right next to Eastern Michigan in the standings. The Huskies are 6-10 in the conference and 7-23 overall. So you'd like to think if you're a Cardinals fan that, you know, you can, you know, at least take three out of four in that series. Obviously that's easier said than done, but yeah, Ball State and Central Michigan, Miami's still sitting there at third. Western Michigan, 10-6 overall, or I'm sorry, 10-6 in the MAC, but only 11-15 overall. And Ohio at 11-9, 17-13 right now. We've continued to talk about how impressed we've been with the Bobcats. We'll see how they're able to finish out the season here. And anything else that stood out to you on the baseball diamond this week, Sam?
Not really. Unfortunately, these top teams, I looked at the schedule, aren't playing each other for a couple more series. So we have to just keep waiting because I'm just ready for that. We'll talk about it later. That Ball State, Miami, Ohio, and the softball diamond, that was pretty excellent. Way above expectations. Really, really great softball. But yeah, I'm just excited for these top teams to play each other, and we'll see who basically comes out on top, because at this point, every game matters.
Yeah, it really does. And like I said, about a little over a month left in the season right now for as far as baseball goes. And there are some, you know, like you said, none of the top teams going at each other directly this weekend, but there are some good series this weekend. You know, Kent State visiting Miami, Bowling Green taking on Western Michigan, Toledo and Eastern Michigan. So some good series this weekend in the MAC for certain. But you're right. Some of those really, really big matchups are a couple of weeks away from us. You mentioned though, Sam, the highlight of the week, the Tuesday doubleheader between Ball State and Miami in softball. Both of these teams entered this doubleheader undefeated in the conference, tied for first place. They left. Neither is undefeated now. They're still tied for first place, essentially. What more could you ask for from the top two teams in the conference?
Yeah, I think it would have been a little bit lackluster if either team got the sweep. I didn't want them to lose, but at the same time, it was just great softball all around from both of these teams. You have a 4-2 game coming in the first game, and then a game, like you said, on a doubleheader ends in a, was it 8-7 victory for Miami. Ball State was in it. I think people had Miami probably the favorite heading into this, and Ball State held their ground, getting the first win, of the doubleheader. And then in the second game, staying competitive, I think shows great things for this Ball State Cardinals. But I think this series just reinforces why these are the two top teams. We've seen it all season long. This series only emphasized it. It's going to be a tough finish to the end, but Miami Ball State, I mean, this series was as good as you could expect. They didn't let us down.
And, you know, a couple notable things here. Game one of this doubleheader on Tuesday was pitched by Courtney Veerstra of Miami of Ohio. We talked about Courtney last week. She had that unbelievable performance two weekends ago where she threw up a no-hitter on Friday and then a perfect game on Sunday. Just two unbelievable performances back-to-back. Well, she took the mound in game one, and as a credit to Ball State and the strength of this team, they beat her. They beat Courtney Veerstra. I mean, they tagged her for four runs in seven innings. She still had 11 strikeouts, but Ball State, you know, got four runs, all of them earned, and they ended up getting the win over here. Then on in the second game, I'm sure you saw the clip on Twitter, Sam. It was all over the Max official Twitter page, and you know, Ball State and Miami were tweeting about it. But you know, Ball State in game two of this series, this doubleheader, they were up 7-2 going in to the seventh inning. Miami rallied and scored six runs in the bottom of the seventh, which was capped by a walk-off grand slam by Lily Wilmo from the Redhawks. So Ball State easily could have, I mean, it seemed like they had this second game in the bag, and their bullpen just couldn't finish the fight. And Miami with an unbelievable comeback there in the bottom of the seventh inning to steal victory from the jaws of defeat. I like you said, Sam, with the two best teams in the conference, you couldn't ask for anything more. And they really, really delivered. I know we have the follow-up doubleheader next week in Muncie with the Redhawks traveling up there for the return trip. I think those two games will be just as good.
Oh, I expect nothing less. And just for context, Miami is currently first after that doubleheader, 17-1. Ball State is 16-1. So, unfortunately, Cardinals couldn't overtake Miami for that first-place spot. But it's anybody's game. Again, like you said, there's another series to look forward to if you're Cardinals. Both these teams probably want to be definitely wanted to be undefeated heading into this upcoming week. But I think both teams will be satisfied with at least getting one game from this doubleheader. Because if you lose both of these teams, you're basically the second best team in the conference, and who wants to be that?
Yeah, you're not wrong there. And as we rewind a little bit further back to the weekend, you take a look around the MAC, some of the results. Miami swept four games from Buffalo. That seems to be about par for the course for the Redhawks this year. They had won 20 in a row prior to that loss in game one to the Cardinals on Tuesday. Ball State swept four from Akron. Central Michigan took three of four from Northern Illinois. Ohio and Bowling Green split four games. And then the Toledo and Western Michigan series was postponed. That's another story going on in the softball world right now, that the Broncos from Western Michigan have put their program on pause due to some COVID issues. So their series against Toledo this past weekend was postponed. Their game yesterday versus Central Michigan was postponed. And then their series this upcoming weekend at Kent State has been postponed. So you only got about a month left in the season here. Be interesting to see how and if they're able to make these games up. But Western Michigan right now, they're currently sitting at, let's see here, eighth place in the conference. They're at 6-10 overall, 10-20. Or I'm sorry, 6-10 in the conference, 10-20 overall. And, you know, Sam, you look at the standings here in softball, and this is like the complete opposite of almost every other sport, where Ball State and Miami have really, really pulled ahead of the pack here. Miami at 17-1, Ball State at 16-1. Ohio, Toledo's in third place and they're 9-6. I mean, they're like six whole games back of those top two. It's pretty crazy how Ball State and Miami have separated themselves here.
Yeah, it is crazy. And I just want to point out a thing I find a little bit funny. Akron sitting at the bottom of the conference with a not 2-16 in conferences, whatever, but 3-29 overall record. That's just laughable. But yeah, you mentioned the Western Michigan story, obviously unfortunate, but hey, credit to softball for getting to this point with relatively few hiccups. We've seen many sports really devastated, but softball just seems a little bit unfazed. We have Ball State playing 17, Miami scoring 18, Ohio in fact playing 22 games, Bowling Green playing 21. So a lot of these teams are playing a lot of games. But yeah, it's unfortunate to see Western Michigan. We'll have to keep track of how many games do get postponed or canceled from them. But when any sport deals with COVID, I just like to give my shout out. So shout out to all of the softball teams for the MAC for being relatively, I guess, COVID free enough to play some games.
Yeah, for sure. It's certainly, we're not taking it for granted after everything that's been postponed and canceled over the past year. So I agree. At least it's an accomplishment that they even got to this point. So we'll see, obviously moving forward, we'll see how, you know, if and when Western Michigan is able to get those games rescheduled. You take a look here at the upcoming slate of games. I obviously mentioned, you know, starting next week, next Wednesday, the 28th, is going to be that follow-up doubleheader between Ball State and Miami, in softball. But you look at the weekend series here, we got, Miami and Toledo with, three games in Toledo, Buffalo and Central Michigan, in Mount Pleasant, Ohio visiting Ball State in Muncie, and then Akron taking on Northern Illinois in DeKalb. So certainly, a weekend full of action still in the MAC. Despite Western Michigan going on pause, and we'll see what the standings look like come this time next week. We'll see if anyone's able to catch any ground on the Cardinals or the Redhawks. Let's move on to men's soccer here. So I guess both soccers, men's and women's, we had champions crowned this past week, and spoiler alert, Bowling Green really, really taking care of business here in the spring. They were able to get the conference championship in both men's and women's soccer.
Yeah, Zach, I don't know. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think when we recorded last episode, they had announced or the games hadn't been played aside who was going to be in the MAC title, or the women's was, but the men's wasn't, correct?
Yes, I believe that's correct, yes.
So in case you missed it, Bowling Green did end up playing NIU in the men's soccer. The same exact score as the women's, in fact, 2-1. Both Bowling Green teams up 2-1. But the differentiating is the Bowling Green game went into overtime, mm-hmm. a penalty kick goal by Killy Robbins. I believe that's how you pronounce it, probably. Yeah. Giving them the victory. Shout out to both women and men for Bowling Green for getting a MAC tournament. And we'll talk about it later. Going to be playing in both men's and women's NCAA soccer tournaments.
Yeah, and congratulations to both teams. As far as the men's team, this is their seventh time they won the MAC and went to the NCAA tournament. First time since 1997, though. So it's been over 20 years for the Falcons men's team. On the women's side, though, the Lady Falcons, I mean, this is becoming kind of routine for them. This is their third straight MAC women's soccer title and going to be their third straight trip to the NCAA tournament. So obviously both programs flying high right now. You combine that with Bowling Green's women's volleyball title from a couple weeks back, and it's been a lot of good stuff happening for the Falcons athletic department here in the spring. And then you mentioned, Sam, with both teams capturing the MAC tournament championship, both getting that chance to go to the NCAA tournament, and both just recently found out who they're going to be facing in the first round.
On the women's side of things, we'll start there. Bowling Green is going to be facing the Ole Miss Rebels in the NCAA Women's Soccer Tournament. And the men are going to be taking on Monmouth in the men's tournament. So two different programs, obviously, there. But real quick, as you mentioned, Bowling Green, what a heck of a year for your athletics. Outside of the men, which let me down in the MAC tournament when I predicted it, you guys let me down. Outside of that, women's did lose in the MAC title game, but nothing to slouch at. You mentioned the volleyball title. Now you got both soccer titles. Just a round of applause for Bowling Green's athletics because they're having one heck of a season.
Yeah, they really are. And I'm sure a lot of Bowling Green fans would feel great if the football team could take some cues from some of these spring teams and get their act together. But nonetheless, you're exactly right, Sam. I mean, there's a lot going on, a lot of positive happening right now for the Falcons. You mentioned the men's team taking on Monmouth. That will take place next Thursday, the 29th. The women's game against Ole Miss is going to be next Tuesday, the 27th. So when we record next week, we should have the result from that women's game at the very least. The winner of that Bowling Green Ole Miss game will go on to face USC in the second round. And the winner of the Bowling Green and Monmouth game will go on to face Pitt in the second round of the NCAA men's soccer tournament. So best of luck to both of them as they head into the NCAA tournament. Obviously everyone from the MAC always rooting for their conference teammates, even if we root against them in head-to-head competition, always like to see them represent the conference well in the NCAA tournament. Let's move in to some of the other spring sports here, Sam. Track and field, we had some great individual performance this week, or a couple great performances this week. I mean, you look at the men's track athlete of the week, Amir Willis. He was first in the men's 100-meter race at the Roadrunner Invitational last Saturday. He ran the 110.18 seconds. That is fast. If I was Sean Lewis, I might be asking Amir Willis to see if he wants to play wide receiver. But just all around some more great performances this week in track and field, Sam.
Yeah, I said it last week. I'll say it again. Shout out to these people for being the best out of the runners. Like it's impressive because basically most people can run. So shout out to them. But yeah, one heck of a season. You mentioned the Sean Lewis asking the Kent State. I mean, why wouldn't you? We see a bunch of track and field athletes like DK Metcalf be able to be NFL stars. So sure. Put her out wide out. Akron probably needs a couple weapons. Bowling Green needs a couple weapons. Just sitting out there on wide receiver.
Yeah.
I will say one thing, Zach. It's crazy how many athletes of the week there are on track and field. I know there's a lot of different events within track and field.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot that goes into it.
So not only do you have the men's and women's track of that the field, you also have other nominees, and no discredit to them. It's just a lot. There's like 10 other nominees.
Yeah. So it's not easy. It's not easy to make this list for sure. I agree with you there. The things that I always appreciate looking at the MAC, the track and field athletes of the week is like some of these distance runners and the times that they put up. I want to give a shout out to Ashley Tutt from Northern Illinois. She was the women's track athlete of the week. She broke a school record in the 10,000 meter race. So 10,000 meters. So that's a 10K. That's 6.2 miles that she's running. She did 6.2 miles in 33 minutes and 25 seconds. I mean, you do the math. I mean, a 6-minute mile pace would be 36 minutes. A 5-minute mile pace would be like 30 minutes. So, I mean, she ran 6.2 miles at like roughly a 5:30 pace. That is absurd to me. I couldn't run 1 mile in a 5:30 pace, and she did that 6.2 times. When I see things like that, like that's an elite athlete. You're just running, but that's unbelievable to me.
And what's crazy is reading her bio is she was only second because the person ahead of her set meet and facility records with a time of 32:43. So the only reason she was crazy to think she was in second is because a girl just basically broke all the records.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is crazy. I mean, like you said, and we talked about this last week where a lot of people look at it, it's like, oh, like they're just running. Anybody can do that. But when you look at those times, I mean, that's just, that's absurd to me. I could never do that. So shout out to Ashley Tutt. Shout out to Amir Willis, who was the men's track athlete of the week. Will Gross from Akron was the men's field athlete of the week. School record mark 67.5 meters in the men's hammer. And then the women's field athlete of the week, Grace Tennant from Kent State. She won the shot put at the University of Buffalo invitation on Saturday, a personal best mark of 53 feet and 6.25 inches. That's her MAC. That was the best throw in the MAC this year, 33rd best in the country. She's now number 7 all time on Kent State's all time outdoor performance list. So a lot of great performances here we've had in the MAC in track and field here over the last couple of weeks, Sam, and man, it makes me never want to run again, because I feel like I'm never going to be able to do what some of these kids in the MAC are doing today. But anyway, next up, we had another championship this past weekend. The men's and women's swimming and diving championships took place this past weekend in Ypsilanti, hosted by Eastern Michigan. And Sam, we had a couple new champions, Miami on the men's side, and Buffalo. Finally, someone knocked Akron off that pedestal on the women's side.
And we don't have to talk about Bowling Green anymore. So,
yeah.
So Akron fans, you can be happy. We don't have to talk about Bowling Green there, but yeah, like you said, Miami managed to get it done in the MAC men's swimming and diving championship. And then Buffalo on the women's side of things got it done, captured their first title in school history. So big things coming out of the swimming and diving arena.
Yeah, certainly. And I mean, you look at Miami, this was their second title in 3 years. They also won back in 2019. And the thing that really struck me about this is that, you know, for anyone that's not familiar with, swimming and diving and how, the scoring of the meets and stuff, I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on it, but you know, it's like a track and field meet where there's a number of different events and each team gets, points based on where their athletes place. And when you look at the final team results here, on the men's side, I mean, Miami didn't just win this thing. I mean, they blew everyone out of the water. They finished in first place with 932 points. Missouri State came in second with 687. I mean, Miami was 250 points above every other team in the field here. I mean, that is domination. And it was really, they capped the meet with a number of awards for the year. Henry Duvenhage was named the MAC Freshman Swimmer of the Year, along with MAC Swimmer of the Year in general. And then Holly Bone-McCron was given the honor of MAC Coach of the Year. So, I mean, this Miami men's team really, really, really dominant there. You love to see that. And then on the women's side though, Buffalo, their first, title in program history, much closer. They only squeaked out that win over Akron by 7 points. Although those two teams were head and shoulders above the rest of the field.
Yeah. I will say, going back to the men's team, if you haven't looked at the first team, it's a little wild with how much points Miami won by when Missouri State has close to 6 first team all MAC teams. You have Powell, you have Michael Clonch, you have Dylan Moffitt, you have Michael Hampel, you have Arthur Curry and AJ Husky, and Miami only had 4. My bad, but still, it's still impressive with how much you mentioned the defeat by when Missouri State had more people in the first team all MAC. And then looking on the women's side, Buffalo had one heck of a season, finished the year undefeated through their meets. So shout out to them. Like you said, squeaking out against Akron, but well deserved for the Buffalo Bulls there. Yeah, just two great meets, two great events, really.
Yeah, no doubt. And you look at the on the women's side there, Buffalo again pulling out their first title in program history, and the coach of the year, Andy Beshore from Buffalo. I don't think that's a surprise, given that they just won their first conference title and knocked off the incumbent. Outstanding swimmer of the year was Brittany Beecher from Buffalo as well. So really, really, really good, strong performance there from the Bulls. And, that's an interesting point you made about on the men's side, Sam, about how, Missouri State actually outnumbered Miami on the all MAC first team. That is interesting, the fact that they did that, and yet Miami kind of blew them out in such commanding fashion. But hey, nonetheless, good for both programs. Miami and Buffalo, certainly something to hang their hat on here as the spring sports season starts to wind down. So congrats to both of them, especially congrats to Buffalo getting your first conference tournament championship or first conference championship in program history there. Kudos to them. That's never easy to do. And I know that's something that they'll be hanging their hat on for quite some time up there in Buffalo. Before we close out the show here this week, we wanted to touch a little bit on tennis. We hadn't had a chance to talk much about tennis here over the last couple of weeks because we've been, focused on other things, and there's been a lot going on. But Sam, this is something that we were talking about just before we jumped into to recording here tonight. Something, neither of us are going to pretend to be experts on tennis here, but we feel like we can at least give you a rundown of the standings and what's going on. And you look at the women's side of things here, Sam, and seems like this is a common theme right there behind Bowling Green having a great spring. All these programs at Ball State seem to be having a pretty great spring as well. The Cardinals sitting in first place in women's tennis right now. They've won 19 in a row.
Yeah, the main reason I wanted to talk about women's tennis is to kind of big up the Ball State women's tennis team for having a great season. 19-2, 10-0. Bowling Green has had three great spring seasons. This is one of our spring seasons that I can be proud of. Ball State having one heck of a season on a 19-game winning streak. Zach, how many games did Miami win in their softball? Was it 20?
They got to 20. Yeah, they did get to 20. So you're almost there, Ball State.
So no pressure to Ball State. All I'm saying is if you want to be the best, you got to beat the best. So 21 wins is all I'm asking for a win streak. If you can do that, you'll be proud of my heart. But just to run down the other standings, behind Ball State, you have Toledo 8-3, 12-7. Not too bad of a season as well. Bowling Green 7-4, 11-6 overall. You have Western Michigan 5-5, 13-5. Northern Illinois 5-5, 12-12 overall. Buffalo 3-7, 6-7 overall. And then rounding it out, Miami and Eastern on the bottom, 8-11, 7-13 respectively. Overall, Zach, obviously Ball State, the number stands out, 19-2 and 10-0 in the MAC 19-game winning streak. But the other MAC teams, especially Toledo and Bowling Green, aren't having that bad of seasons at all.
Yeah, no, they're really not. I mean, Toledo is only, technically, if you do the math, I mean, they're only 2.5 games back of Ball State. So by no means is this, is this season, Ball State like run away with this or anything. There's still opportunities for the Rockets to potentially catch them. They do have one game left, Ball State and Toledo do on May 2nd, where Ball State's going to travel to Toledo to take on the Rockets. Ball State did win the first matchup this year between the two teams in Muncie, although it was four sets to three. So certainly was not a walk in the park for the Cardinals. But like you said, Sam, I mean, a winning streak of 19 games is nothing to sneeze at. And you look at their schedule, they lost their first two games of the year. They were both on the road against Power Five opponents. They lost at Louisville and they lost at Notre Dame. So no one's going to fault you for losing those games against high profile programs like that. Since then, they have taken care of business across the rest of their non-conference. And then obviously in the MAC as well, So their next game coming up here this weekend, taking on Miami in Oxford on Saturday. We'll see if they can get the 20 games, to get that 20 game win streak and match the Red Hawks streak in softball. Given that Miami is 2-8 in the conference and 8-11 overall this year, you'd think the Cardinals can handle business there on Friday, but hey, I've seen crazier things happen.
Yeah. And what's crazier is they have Toledo has 4 games left, and I believe Ball State does as well. So it could come down to that last game. Who knows? You'd like to think with 4 games, you're up 2.5 games. You would be able to take care of business to be able to claim the outright championship. But like you said, crazier stuff has happened in sports. We'll have to wait and see. Every game, I like to say every game matters. Every game does matter at this point. You got to get it done. Even with your 19-game winning streak, you got to beat Miami in the softball streak. You just got to, for bragging rights. But, yeah, anyway, yeah, shout-out to the women. And then, Zach, do you want to run down what's happening on the men's side of things?
Yeah, let's take a look at the men's side here, too. Now, men's tennis here in the MAC is similar to men's soccer, where it's a much smaller competition. There's even University of Binghamton from New York is actually a contingent member of the MAC here in men's tennis. So we only have 6 teams with Binghamton included right now to run down through the standings. So we got Western Michigan in first place, sitting at a perfect 8-0 in the conference, 19-1 overall. Northern Illinois 7-1 in the conference, 20-2 overall. Ball State 4-4, 15-5 overall. Toledo 2-6, 6-8. Buffalo 1-6, 3-7. And then Binghamton sitting at the bottom of the conference, 0-5 in the conference and overall on the season. So a tough year for the Bearcats on the tennis court there. But Sam, you look at the standings here, Ball State not far behind. I mean, 4-4, 15-5 overall. But 8-0 for Western Michigan, 7-1 for Northern Illinois. You know, those two teams seem like they've kind of separated themselves at the top of the conference.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. 19-2 is good and all. 19-1, 20-2 aren't half bad at all. You're not on the same winning streak, I guess you could say, as the State was on the women's tennis. But, yeah, Western Michigan and Northern Illinois getting it done on the men's tennis side of things. You mentioned Ball State a little bit far back there about is that like 3.5 games from either school. So
yeah.
A lot of work to get done. Probably not likely. It's probably a 1-2 race for the Western Michigan, Northern Illinois, but not a bad season at all for Ball State. 15-5 overall is nothing to slouch at. I'll take that any day of the week. Of course, you'd like your conference record to be a little bit better, but not a bad record running it out. Buffalo having a bit of a struggle season. Toledo as well. Binghamton, which is one of the few times I've ever heard Binghamton be ever, having an 0-5 record, winless, nothing you ever want to see. But yeah. Shout out to Western Michigan, Northern Illinois for not having too bad of seasons. I'll give them some credit for having a good season.
Tough to please. I hear you. I get what you're saying. And actually, you know what? This week on Friday night, in the final game of the regular season, in what will probably end up determining the conference title, Northern Illinois travels to Western Michigan to take on the Broncos in Kalamazoo. Again, that's Friday night. Western Michigan enters 8-0 in the conference. Northern Illinois 7-1. You know, I'm not going to say that's a huge game, but that's a huge game. And with Northern Illinois, their only loss in the conference thus far was a home loss to Western Michigan. They have a chance to return the favor to the Broncos on Friday in Kalamazoo. We'll see what happens there.
Yeah, I love when the schedule just falls into place perfectly to determine the champion. I remember all the way back to the Ball State run they had, and the only reason they got to play Buffalo or and potentially play San Jose State was because they got the chance to beat Western Michigan in the finale of the regular season. So I'm excited for that. I love when game scheduling just works out like that, where they have the favorites just somehow. Obviously, some sports, you can obviously tell who's going to be the favorite and kind of plan accordingly. But when it falls into place perfectly, it's beautiful to see. And I'm ready for that day to come, because if I know anything, wasn't it soccer? There was a similar, it was Ball State, wasn't it?
Ball State had to beat Eastern Michigan. Yes. To win the Eastern or the Western division to get to the, yes, to the women's soccer championship. Yeah.
You love to see it. And this is what college sports are all about right here. One team against each other, you lose, you go, you don't go home in this, but you know, yeah, what I mean. I can't wait for that day to come soon enough.
One game for all the marbles. Yeah, it's certainly, you couldn't draw it up any better. One final thing before we go here, catching word from CMU alum and super fan, and also our creative director here at the Hustle Belt, James Jimenez, just kind of let us know that, you know, hearing through the CMU grapevine, that it seems that former UTEP and Auburn head coach Tony Barbee is the favorite to be named the next men's head basketball coach at Central Michigan. Sam, you look up Tony Barbee. His resume isn't terrible. It is a little bit underwhelming, I think, if you ask me. 5 years at UTEP. His last 2 years were pretty good. That last season at UTEP, 26-7, 15-1 in 2009, 2010. But then after that, you know, you look, see, you know, 4 years at Auburn, not great results. They've gotten a lot better since he left, with, you know, Bruce Pearl being there now. But I mean, 4 years at Auburn with a 49-75 record, 18-50 in the SEC. I don't know. It seems like he had some success at the mid-major level with UTEP being in Conference USA. I wonder if he'll be able to recreate that in Mount Pleasant. He spent the last 6 years, 7 years as an assistant at Kentucky. I don't know if he has any ties to Michigan or the region or anything like that. But it looks like this is what the way that the Chippewas are going.
I think one positive is going to be recruiting. We all know how great Kentucky had been at recruiting. And yeah, I assume Tony Barbee being the associate head coach was a big part of that. You also have to wonder, is he going to switch Central Michigan's approach to what they did at Kentucky, what they're most known for, and being kind of a one-and-done school, if they're going to try to do that, if they can even do that. But yeah, he's definitely going to be a help at the recruiting front. Obviously, Central Michigan didn't have the best season last season. You just saw Eastern Michigan go out and get their head coach, potentially should be a long term. So hopefully, if Tony Barbee signs a contract to become the head coach at CMU, he can turn that program around, because last season wasn't the best. But if he's as good a recruiter as I kind of believe him to be, Central Michigan should be in relatively good shape.
I agree with that. Yeah, recruiting is the name of the game in college basketball. No doubt about that. And he's also, I would think, you know, he's no stranger to recruiting out of the transfer portal, having, you know, working at Kentucky. So he certainly has the chops. We'll see what he does. We'll see when this becomes official. And I know in talking with James and, you know, hearing from some other CMU fans, I mean, it is going to be a total rebuild there in Central Michigan. So certainly not an easy job, but we will see if he's up to the task. Sam, that about wraps it up here, I think, from my perspective. Any final thoughts for the people here tonight? Anything we didn't cover, anything you wanted to touch on?
Not really. I think this was a jam-packed episode. A lot happened in the basketball world, especially Ball State's program, which I was just caught off guard by, but hey, I'm here for it. Change, you can't stop change, and that's what it is. Unfortunately, you have people leave, you have people come in. That's the name of the game. But we'll have to see. We'll have to keep track of Tony Barbee. He is only the front runner. He has not been signed to any sort of contract, but so it's not official as of recording this on April 21st. Which, considering our luck, Zach, it'll probably happen. Probably happened Thursday or Friday. We'll have to talk about it next week. But yeah, really great stuff on the baseball diamond. Loved what I saw of the softball series, especially the series between Ball State and Miami, hopefully we get the more when they when Miami travels to Ball State. I'm excited to see what Bowling Green can do in the soccer realm, see if they can get a win in either men's or women's soccer in the NCAA tournament. And yeah, it's been a fun spring sports season. We have the NFL draft next week, and I'm ready for that. See some MAC athletes get drafted next.
I'm with
next
you there.
Thursday.
Yep, I'm with you there, Sam. And we mentioned this briefly last week, and just to kind of reiterate again, we are next week we will have some focus on the NFL draft. We will release next week's episode one day early on Thursday, so you have it in time for the first round on Thursday evening. I'm with you there, Sam. Really going to be keeping an eye on the Bowling Green, both Bowling Green soccer programs this week, hopefully. Would love to see if one of them could get a victory in the NCAA tournament there. Also, looking forward to some MAC baseball this weekend as well. That's going to wrap it up for us here on the MAC Bandwagon, episode 42. Thank you so much for stopping by this week. As always, I am Zach Folador. He is Sam Thillman. We appreciate the support, everyone. Thanks for stopping by and lending us your ears. We'll talk to you next week.